Too tied up the results of activities. do that.
I have a carpentry work at W.
Yeah, it funds, yeah. So, it's, you know, you yourself maybe trying to live in the future too much or something like that. You might just be going. I just feel my 7 years old. Which doesn't necessarily come out as usual.
So, Adam, what is your understanding of Christian life at this point?
At this point, I guess condition life to me means, or just you're conditioned by something, maybe by the laws of nature.
Yes, that's correct. Conditioned life means you're subject to conditions. And it's amazing how people not perceive that they are subject to conditions. Something conditions you. It's like an air conditioner. An air conditioner conditions the temperature in the room. So conditioned life means that illusion is conditioning you. So, the main conditions, the main things that are conditioning everyone, very few people perceive. And even when you point it out to them, they don't care. Well, that's no big deal. Condition, what's main conditioning you? Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadha. Birth, death, disease, old age. Now what happens when someone says that? Immediately respond, oh, that's just part of life, right? I mean, you know, that's not conditioning, that's just part of nature. We fail to perceive that birth, death, disease, and old age, these are artificial conditions imposed upon us, and they don't have to be. But we're so ignorant, we take these conditions as part of nature, rather than understanding these things are not meant to be covering up our life. So conditioned life means to be subject to conditions. Now, if you're supposedly some kind of spiritual thinker, you have to think. If I'm supposed to be a spiritual being, what am I doing subjected to material conditions? You ever thought like that, Doc? What is spirit soul doing in these circumstances? Subject to conditions. Conditioning means you don't want it, but it still happens. But you get used to it under the influence of Maya, just like you get used to the open weather. Could be bright sun and rain is coming right with the bright sun in the sky. You know, 1 minute it's sunny and it's cloudy, and it's sunny again, and the wind's blowing and the wind stops. Is it like that in Hamilton? Yeah. So you get used to it. It's like in New Zealand, when you go on a holiday or somewhere, you don't worry about the weather, you just, it's just change and, don't even really listen to the weather reports or anything like that. There was one couple that were coming to the loft in Wellington. They're from the Netherlands. And so the husband had a job with the New Zealand, meteorological, net, we call it something like that. So, he was really into it, I have a very important job. I'm determining the weather and giving reports to all the airports and this and that. And making the official weather statement, he's doing something that has impact. So we were sitting at the dinner table at the lot, and I said, come on. He said, no one in New Zealand takes weather reports seriously, we don't even really listen to them. He was like astonished. What do you mean? So no one really consults weather reports or believes them. Even if they happen to see them on television, they know there's a 50% chance they're going to be wrong. He couldn't accept it. So then there was about 20 people in the room after the Sunday program. So I said, okay, all of you who Listen to weather reports. Or consult weather reports. Raise your hand. And nobody raised their hand. He was like, devastated. 2 weeks later, his wife told me he quit his job. The complete identity crisis. Get over it, you know. He was really, you know, he really had, you know, himself deluded that, you know, this is a key job, you know, weather, and people were really relying on it. Nobody saw a room full of 20 people, and no one could care less. He was devastated. He quit his job 2 weeks later. So, everybody's used to the weather here. They're conditioned. They're used to the weather conditions. And they know the weather reports are generally inaccurate. It's a bit different in the States because, for example, you know, they have these continental weather patterns. So you can very much, very easily, 90% of the time you can predict the weather. But, you know, New Zealand's a maritime climate. Things are always blowing over the place. So, yeah, when you have a big weekend coming up, you know, you're planning to do something, you just do it. You don't worry about the weather. Whereas, like in the States, you know, that's a big issue. Everyone's consulting the 7-day advance report, the 3-day advance report, and, you know, they, if they get a negative report, they won't go anywhere that weekend. But here, you know, you just, well, even if it rains, it could change in the middle of the day. And I remember 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, before I got the Astra parade in Auckland, the night before, the weather report was saying, rain all day, heavy rain from morning till night. And all the devotees, they were a bit sad, you know, just very bleak weather report, pouring rain from morning till night. Next morning came, clear blue skies, 22 degrees, all day long. So everyone here is used to those conditions. Now the weather is what it is, you just go about your business. Similarly, we've gotten used to birth, death, disease, and old age being packed in these temporary bodies, and we accept it as natural. We go about our business. And when you have a material body, what is your business? You're trying to get some pleasure for it. Many people are preoccupied with the quest to find meaning in their life, find fulfillment. You've been like that, right? But when you realize that you're simply trying to find something for your body and mind, mind is body also, when you say the bodily concept of life, that includes the mind, so when you realize that all your quest for fulfillment is simply to deal with the body, it becomes obvious when you know what's going on. What did you think it meant that you wanted to find meaning and fulfillment?
Just open it a little bit better.
The moon was blowing before, maybe it stopped now.
I
mean,
I think I knew what it wasn't. I knew that it wasn't.
Yeah, this inner emptiness, mm-hmm. And you're looking to plug it. Mm-hmm. And what did you think was going to plug it?
Everything I think I knew. I'm just trying everything.
Trying everything. We understand that our so-called quest for fulfillment and meaning is simply the pursuit of the bodily conception of life. It makes it easier, doesn't it? Can you accept that? That your quest for meaning and fulfillment is just the pursuit of the body? Now you do, but before you did, right?
Now I realize what I was thinking before. I knew that there was something, but the age was this spiritual emptiness.
Well, there's a spiritual emptiness too, but you thought you could fill it with my material methods.
Yeah.
That's why we laugh. when people say I want a fulfilling career, I want to work with dignity, a job with dignity. As soon as you remember you're just practicing conditioned life, you're living conditioned life, where's the dignity? What do you think? Older Dave, where's the dignity in conditioned life? Run old gracefully? Do you see any dignity in conditioned life as it could?
No, I see it as a process, really. It would be formed by other reasons of what I'm saying to what's going on.
That reminds me, you mentioned process, it reminds me of another phrase Prabhupada uses in his book. So you are undergoing the process of conditioned life with your existence. You see yourself undergoing, you're like a chemicals in a refinery, you're undergoing the process. Like being processed at the margin point in the refinery. You're being put through it. But conditioned life means we accept these things as normal and natural. And as people are fond of saying today, well, it's just all part of growth. It's all part of the learning experience. No one knows the lesson you're supposed to learn, as I've pointed out so many times, but they all say it's part of the learning process. Part of growth. Yeah, growth means you're growing older, the tumors are growing. That's the growth that's going on. But they think there's some kind of subtle growth, you know, some undefinable growth. It's very definable, the growth that's happening. You're growing older. Your bones are getting brittle. Your teeth will fall out. And when you start talking like this, people say, oh, this is being negative. There's something else to life that we can add. And it's different for each person. So we should just cut to the core of all this. Brouhaha about quest for fulfillment and finding your own meaning and just see things for what they are. You're just trying to gratify the body, that's all. You want a nice situation for the body. Just like Di was speaking last night. You hit a certain age and you start to want a nest. What does that mean? Is that some kind of like profound, deep, philosophical thing? What is it?
Nice body.
Yeah, the body. The body says, now, for me, you should get one place, your nook for the body. And then look for another body that you don't mind being in the nest all the time. And then, after a while, produce other bodies to accompany you in the nest. That's all that's going on. Isn't it amazing how the illusory energy makes these various stages of our life seem so profound and important? It's like when you became a teenager, it's like a real profound thing, you know? You don't realize, it's just normal. The hormones have changed and therefore, you know, your outlook has changed. No, when you're 13 years old, you're 14, you really take yourself very seriously. No one can understand. Only you and your friends. They can understand. Right? It's like 14-year-old girls, 15-year-old girls. They spend so much time on the telephone chatting about this mess because only they can understand each other. You used to do that? And the men, they, when they're teenagers, they express it differently. They have to show some kind of identity by excelling in something or being someone special. biological phases of life we take to be profound, but actually they're just routine phases of that human beings even share with the animals. When you become old, then, you know, society attaches a very special significance to old age. You're now a senior citizen. They have that expression, the golden years. The mature years. You've been through it all. You're wise. You can look at the younger generations and nod your head, yes, yes, they'll just have to go through these things. We've been through all that. You're supposed to be wise, but you're even more ignorant. But society bestows a false sense of value to all these various phases, which are just routine conditioned life. Now you're an old person. You're wise. You know. You're settled. You've made it through the storm. If you manage to be married, you know, into your late 50s and 60s, people think, oh, yes, you definitely have been a very wise couple, weather the storm. You see, you and Adam in your early 60s. Mary's probably, yeah, you don't have that famous picture here. I had some famous in the States, Whistler's grandmother. That was a famous artistic work of an old lady. Old farmer lady holding a pitchfork. And then, of course, babyhood, that gets a very big significance. Babyhood is treated very significantly. Everybody likes babies, especially if they're someone else's. Take care of them. It's considered a very special thing, you know, a baby. Babies are aborted. The other half the time, the mother wants a child. And, oh, this is very special maternity life, you know. You have to go to the maternity shops, you know. They got maternity fashions. You know, we plan, you know, how the baby's going to be in the house. If you got money, you call one of these baby experts to baby proof the house, you know. And you know, as the belly is swelling, you're talking to all your friends. Yes, 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 it's due in, you know, 5 months. And you just really get caught up in the whole, you know, phase, you know. It's actually just conditioned life, but we, you know, we attach a deep significance to it.
Oh, I didn't know you were expecting.
Yes.
Did you have a CAT scan yet with a female?
Yeah, that's called a CAT scan. That's a brain scan, yeah. Yeah, something like that. So people attach deep import to just these routine physical phases, birth, teenage years. Then when you're in your early 20s, you think that's important too? You've been through that, right? Yeah, you come out of your teenage years and you're not old and you're not an adult quite, and you're not a teenager, and you're just at the right moment. And now, as you say, you're ready to go into your nesting time, and that's significant in itself, right? Yes. And all of a sudden, instead of, you know, she's been traveling the world for 2 years, now she's thinking only about stability. Where's the stable nest going to be, and who's going to occupy the nest? But everything swings the opposite direction now. Early 20s was roaming here and there, sampling this, sampling that, being with this one, being that one. That was very significant for that time. The quest for fulfillment, finding inner awareness. Now, she's heading into the late 20s, and it's time for stability, the nest. Why something else. Then you become a mature working lady, able to hold down a job and go through the motions of working and pretending that you have value to whoever you work for. That in some way you're contributing to society. Then you go into your 40s and you probably have a midlife crisis, you know, hit 45. Hey, I'm going to be old soon, but I still have energy. I still have a chance to enjoy. And then you might even turn upside down whatever situation you're in. You might jump out of the nest. Then by the time you're in your mid-50s, you realize, you know, the end is coming here. I might as well just stop trying to be so creative and just settle down and take it as it comes. And I've learned some things and start watching the younger generations go through the same things you went through when you kind of nod your head, yeah, I know all about that. They've been there, done that. You don't know who you are, where you're going, but you get this false sense of superiority. You know, look at those teenagers, look at those 30-year-olds, yeah. They'll move through those stages, you know. They'll come out of it, you know. Yeah. And if you're still with, you know, some partner that you together discuss the younger generation.
They're just not like we were when we were their age.
And anyway, you're rocking in your rocking chairs, you know, in your batch. So, all these are just conditions, conditioned life. But we attach a false sense of importance to them. We just don't see that they're phases of illusion. We're just identifying with the body, taking bodily phases to be very important. And we can't perceive that we're simply being subjected unnecessarily to birth, death, disease, and old age. And no one wants to wake up in the morning and think, I'm subjected to birth, death, disease, and old age. We don't want to do that, right? You don't want to do that, right? What do you want to wake up in the morning and think? Revitalized for what? You want to wake up? Okay, now I'm awakened now.
To feel happy all day.
You want to feel happy all day, why? Why? I'm not saying you're wrong, I'm just asking why. What's there to be happy about?
Whatever your life is, to be happy about it.
Whatever your life is, yeah. Look, can you give us an example?
For example?
Being happy in the home you're living in, high school, working.
But that's all?
Oh, sorry.
I mean, can you give us an example from you? Do you wake up in the morning?
Oh, I'm happy. Look, happy to be in this house, to be living in this house.
Then you go to work.
I'm so happy to be in this job.
Do you do that? And how then do you wake up just being happy all day?
That's what we have. So that's what my reality is.
So what would your reality be?
Sometimes I fluctuate and I'm happy to fluctuate to school.
So this happiness, what is it about? Contentment, like a cat that purrs on the floor. Content about what? Peaceful. Nothing's harassing you. It's kind of negative happiness, isn't it? No problems for the moment. I feel happy. I've got no problems anymore. This is negative happiness. You understand? It's actually not real happiness. It's just so-called happiness that at this particular moment, nothing that you know of is harassing you. But actually, you are being harassed. Your body's breaking down. Nature is harassing you. Like if you go to the parts of the South Island, in the summer if you go to the Abel Tasman Park, beautiful bays in there. But what spoils it all? Huh? Yeah, in the summertime, too many people. And what else? Sandflies. Yeah. So then, you want to avoid the sandflies, you want to avoid the people, you go in the winter. Then the water's cold. And the morning nights are cold. And it's the wrong day, the whole day can go. These are conditions. But we're so deluded that we don't see these conditions. We just take them as normal. So you're simply growing through one condition to another. You went from the baby conditions to the teenage conditions. Now what, you're in the early 20s conditions? Yeah. She's coming out of the early 20s conditions. She's in the late 20s conditions. So you're in the early 20s exploring phase, right?
Alright,
you're heading into the next stage, right? So now the quest is to find the right nest and the right nest occupant, right? But do you see that this is just the conditioning that you're going through? But still, you know anything else to do, right? It's time to nest, it's time to nest. And if you can't find somebody after a while, you just figure, if you can't find like Mr. Right, then you figure, well, let me look for Mr. Almost Right. And if you can't find Mr. Almost Right, then you just, well, yeah, at this point, anything will do. Right? As long as he's got hair on his chest. Anything will do at this point, you know. Yeah, he's not that bad. I could probably whip him into shape. Anyway, that's what you think of. I could probably whip him into shape. Hey, I'm getting, getting old. All my friends have one. I gotta have one, too. These are just phases of conditioning we're going through. So we're discussing conditioned life. Would you see yourself as living conditioned life? So what to do about it? Oh, this is your friend here?
Yeah.
What's your name?
Jen.
You're going to teacher's school too?
Yeah. We have a niece together.
You have a temporary, it's like a temporary watering hole until you separate into your own nest. So, how do you feel conditioned? Mm-hmm.
Looking for a rewarding job.
A rewarding job. Now, what does that mean? I don't mean to sound cynical, but really, let's be honest. What is it? A rewarding job. Rewarding job means a job that gives you money.
A fulfilling job.
What does it fill? Besides your pocket, you hope.
Emotionally.
A job is supposed to give you emotional fulfillment?
Moral.
Let's see. Adam, you're a working man. Do you find moral, emotional fulfillment from your job?
next question.
What about you, Mary? You buy an emotional and moral fulfillment from your job? Is that why you got the job? Did you ask the employer, will this be emotional and moral fulfilling for me? People work for money. And they hope that they might, meet some nice people at work to make up for the boredom or pressure at home. Actually, people who work generally spend more time at work than they do at home in terms of waking hours. So actually they have two worlds, the work world and the home world. And many times because their home life is so stressed and frustrating, they actually, they get more into the work social scene because it's relief from home life. But how in the world would you look for emotional and moral fulfillment at your place of employment? Maybe we're missing something. Well, give us, that's what we're asking.
Well,
we're just doing research here.
Trying to help out of the books.
Mm-hmm.
I work in a social work kind of role, so it's helping me with the material world. Helping out of the books. Emotional development.
Well, I don't want to sound rude, but at the same time, I don't want to be falsely placating. I admit that, when you say, well, I'm doing social work, then later on, supposed to. And I don't know if I want to puncture that kind of balloon, because it, many times I experience it brings about, very animated reactions, like, how can you criticize everything? This is very special and holy. Everyone can understand that I'm helping. Everyone can understand the value of what I'm doing. So that was very dangerous to kind of deal with that. Fools rushing where angels fear to tread. Nevertheless, they were a bit foolish. We'll venture a little bit. As you pointed out, you're trying to help people's bodies and minds, but the people aren't that. So I suppose someone was so dedicated to you, they're doing very important welfare work for you, so they decided to give all attention to your blouse. How does it feel? Particularly with taking care of the flowers, so the flowers in the blouse. But the designs, they're particularly going to take care of those designs. That's like helping somebody's emotions, various particular emotions, take care of those designs on the blouse. Really helping. Now, how would you feel? Because they're not really paying attention to you. Similarly, when you're just helping somebody's body and mind and emotions, these are just layers, these are coverings. You haven't really dealt with the ignorance that person is going through. You understand? The ignorance is, they don't know who they are, why they're in this world. You haven't stopped their old age, disease, and death. You haven't taught them anything that can stop their old age, disease, and death. You're just trying to make this illusion more bearable. Now, is that a very significant thing to do?
Maybe not the rest of it.
Can you imagine yourself? You're looking for your next mate, so maybe you go to a pub or a club and someone comes up to you and, let me help you in your illusion. Maybe I can make your illusion a bit better, more comfortable. What would you say? You say, oh, thank you.
I wouldn't say that.
It's going to deal with the coverings of the problems, the wrappers on the problem. Just like Dave's a carpenter, so he goes to do some building at someone's house, and he notices termites are eating away at everything, and he just tells the person, "Oh, don't worry, I'll just put a layer of paint over everything." I'm helping. How would you like that? Your house is being attacked by termites, eating all the wood inside and out. It's like, then social worker Dave comes to help. "Oh, I see you have a problem here." "Yeah, I'll just cover everything with some nice white paint and I'm helping. Feel better now?" So, how would you be able to see social work like that? But also the hardest thing to see about that is that we also inflate our ego and helping others. Do you understand that? I'm helping others. And we need everyone close to us. And actually, you're not helping anybody. Have you ever had a boil? Do you know anybody who's had a boil? Have you ever tried to cure it by blowing on it? So that's what welfare work is like. You're blowing on the boil, you know, is what's going to help. Or someone has a tumor, and you just blow on the tumor. So this may be a little painful to hear, and then you think, "Well, what am I supposed to do? If that's not helping, then what, right?" But as you yourself said, you're just helping the body and mind, but that's not the person. That's the same as helping the blouse and the designs on the blouse. So you have to learn how to help spirit soul. That's the best education. And that's the only welfare work, because the people are spirit souls. They're not the bodies and minds. So what do you think of that? So now you have to educate yourself how to help the spirit soul. So that's what Bhagavad Gita is all about. Before you set out to help someone, first understand. Become authorized to help. Just don't self-appoint yourself, "I'm the helper." I mean, who appointed you as the helper? Who christened you? You're the helper. Who did that? Suppose one four-year-old kid comes to the door and says, "Hi, I'm a helper. I'll help you." Well, you just laugh, right? Right? Some four-year-old kid comes and says, "I'll help you with your emotional problems." You know, that kid doesn't know anything. All good intentions that the kid may have, but doesn't know anything. And also, you know it's foolish that if you don't know anything and have no knowledge, why should you try to help? So these are all just facades. Rather than admit we don't know what we're doing, you know, we put on these various facades, these various disguises. "I'm the helper." Better. To be more honest, isn't it? "I don't know what I'm doing." But that's very hard to do in this age of bluffing and dishonesty. Most people are personally dishonest, even if they think of themselves as being very nice, they're very personally dishonest. It's very hard to admit, "I don't know what I'm doing." Isn't it? It's like I was speaking with Brendan and Vanessa yesterday. So, they're proceeding in a relationship. Now, I pointed out to them that you have to know what you're doing. What's the point of all this? What's the purpose of this relationship? physical, grappling with bodies and minds. It gets to be boring after a while, you know? Because when you don't have, then you're thinking, oh, this is what I need, right? But what's up? So if it's a genuine relationship, then they'll admit, look, I don't know who I am, you don't know who you are, until we sort this out about what our identity is, we can't help each other. But how many couples will do that? Now, generally what you'll do is, look, you might even admit, I don't know who you are, who I am, but, you know, hey, we're in this nest and we're going to stay here until we get old. We're going to try. And, you know, you can have someone else as long as you have someone else. I think they both look at deals like that. And if you tell me, I'll tell you. And if you don't tell me, then I won't tell you. Yeah, well, you know, this is the modern relationship. Was it Adam who was telling me some of the contemporary marriage vows instead of saying what?
Instead of saying to honor and be faithful, that's to try and be faithful.
So if everyone's admitting we're probably not going to do it, but we're going to try. We'll try our best. We'll give it a couple of years enough. So what do you think? This sounds too severe? Alright, condition life. Alright, next, born into delusion. First, let's look at the verse we're discussing, chapter 7, verse 27. That's page what?
406.
406. Text 27, I'll read the Sanskrit. Ichta dvesha samuttena dvandva mohena bharata sarvabhutani sammoham sarayanti parantapa. The guy, you want to read the translation?
This sign of that, a conqueror of the foe, all living entities are born into delusion, bewildered by dualities arisen from desire and hate. The real constitutional position of the living entity is that of subordination to the Supreme Lord, who is pure knowledge. When one is deluded into separation from this pure knowledge, he becomes controlled by illusory energy and cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The illusory energy is manifested in the duality of desire and hate. Due to desire and hate, the ignorant person wants to become one with the Supreme Lord, and envies Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Pure devotees, who are not deluded or contaminated by desire and hate, can understand that Lord Sri Krishna appears by his internal potencies, but those who are deluded by duality and nescience think that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is created by material energies. This is their misfortune. Such deluded persons, symptomatically dwell in dualities of disorder and honor, misery and happiness, woman and man, good and bad, pleasure and pain, etc., thinking, this is my wife, this is my house, I am the master of this house, I am the husband of this wife. These are the dualities of delusion. Those who are so deluded by dualities are completely foolish and therefore cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
All living entities are born into delusion. That's number one. How many of you felt like you were born into delusion? You?
Felt like that when I was born.
Huh? You feel that you were born into delusion?
I've never felt it before.
Right, you felt you were born into knowledge and awareness?
Into reality.
Reality?
Well, that's how I felt.
Right. But now, do you consider that as actually reality, or now you consider it as delusion? Yeah. You were born, and immediately you identified that I am this body, and everyone said, oh, look at you, and it tickled you, and your name is such and such, and everyone was looking at you, and gradually as a little baby you got used to getting attention. And you immediately accepted, I am this body. You have no idea where you came from. You forgot completely. Isn't that delusion? What do you think, Brandon? Do you think that you were born as a delusion?
I agree with that about not remembering where it came from.
Mm-hmm. But the delusion is, you think, I am this body, and I am this mind.
I thought, my first recall, the first thought I had that I can remember was, and that was before remembering seeing anything, it was just that this time I'm going to do something different. I don't know what it was that I was supposed to do that was going to be different, but it was like this time I have a chance of, I remember immediately being grateful as though I'd been given a second opportunity. And this time there was something that I was going to do or not do that was going to make a difference.
So?
But I don't know what it was, and I don't know where I was coming from, and I'm not sure where I was supposed to be going.
And now, how old are you now?
25 years old.
So have you done anything different this time?
I've probably done a lot of the things that I wasn't supposed to do, but at the same time, I've possibly been more aware and more ready to accept that they weren't right for of any importance or
it sounds like if I can give
you quite often I know that what I'm doing when I'm indulging if you like but then I do know that I'm not on the right I'm deviating from the path I'm aware of I feel like I'm out on a lot. I'm quite often out on a lot of different paths than I'm supposed to be on. But somehow I've got like a external lifeline hooked onto the path where I'm supposed to be. I'm not exactly sure what it looks like.
Then how can you measure what path are you supposed to be on if you're not exactly sure?
It's just the one where all the lights are going, and if I miss one of them, you know, I end up taking an alternative route or
so. Where? What's your destination?
Very quick or something.
What's your destination?
I wouldn't know how to picture it or describe it.
Well, then,
but I mean, at one point in my life, I was lucky to have a series of pictures come through my mind when I must have been in a low, and I was struggling to stay alive, and I sort of like prayed, like I said, okay, you know, I'm doing something wrong, I accepted, what am I supposed to be doing? And I got a series of pictures of progression, which was all material and related to my material life. And at the end of it, there was a picture of, like, I'd gone through all these progressions and it's my material existence. When I got to the end of it, I saw this outcome. And at the instant that I saw it, it like flashed away before I could actually see what it was, and then a light, like a candle, sort of came on. I don't know if there was an hallucination, but I took a moral from it, and that being that it didn't matter so much what the end outcome was, because things can always change.
Well,
and I don't necessarily know what it is, where I'm going, and even if I did, it could change by the time I get there.
So then basically you would agree that sounds like someone who says like that doesn't have a clue.
I could be convinced that it wasn't possible to have an idea.
Well, you know the story about sour grapes, right? Like the fox and the sour grapes. You know about that one, huh? The fox was going to the forest and it saw some luscious grapes hanging from a high vine. The fox jumped once and missed, twice and missed, three times and jumped for those luscious grapes and missed. So finally the fox just said, ah, they were probably sour anyway. So a lot of times, because we don't know, we think, oh, there's no answers. You just got to do the best you can. Progressing in your own way. But how do you progress? Progress means going towards something. How do we make progress if we don't know where we're going?
So it's those ones.
Huh? Just like when you get in your car to go somewhere, you have a destination in mind. Now you have a destination in mind, and even if you think you're just going out for a drive aimlessly, you always know to come back home.
Sometimes, you
just don't drive around and stay out. You always come back.
There have been times where I haven't had a cat, or much more than a shave on my day, and I haven't had any destination, and or walked around.
That was a very temporary condition. From a more subtle point of view, you did have a destination. You just couldn't see it. Bhagavad-gita will teach you that you're being driven by what are called the modes of material nature. So even though you may not recognize how you're being driven, how you're being conditioned, it's still happening. It's like when the mode of passion strikes you, you have to act passionately. Now you may think it's all your self-actuated decision, but Bhagavad-gita will teach you you're just responding to influences of nature. So getting back to born into delusion, we can open that window a little bit more. A lot of us think that we were born as innocent children, but this is not so. We're bringing into the present life our karma from our preceding life. The fact that you have a body and mind now shows you that you're having reactions to what you did in your past life. The present body and mind are reactions to your behavior in your past life.
Can we tell by looking at our body what our past life, what form we were in?
No.
Past life?
No.
Just how we behaved.
You can, though, have a rough idea by looking at your consciousness what your next body will be. Where those pictures, those famous pictures in Bhagavad Gita? Turn to the picture section, plate 12. You find it, plate 12? What's your name, sir?
Jim.
Yes. Oh, you got it right there. So, Bhagavad Gita here is teaching you how consciousness, your present consciousness, brings about your next body. So you can look at the picture and see it is possible to have some rough idea. Yes, please.
Thank you.
put at work is to stop this kind of thing that you're seeing. Not give people temporary massages of their emotions. And then you get kind of a good feeling from it. Which is actually like a bit of egotism, you know, I'm helping. Did I help you? Well, I'm glad I helped you. And then you can go home feeling good about yourself. I'm a good helper. I blowed on the bubble. I blew on the bubble. on the boil. I blew on the boil. So, born into delusion.
Are there any positive points?
Positive? Yes. You think about Krishna, you go to Krishna.
So, is it like becoming one with the universe?
No.
Sitting next to God?
Becoming one with the universe. The universe is not your home.
Huh?
No. You're meant to be beyond the material universe.
But the universe was beyond material.
No, the universe is just a material atmosphere. You don't belong here. As spirit soul, your home is beyond the confines of the material universe. So first, let's finish off with the way we have to deal with number one. Born into delusion. Everyone understands this, being born into delusion. You just didn't have a clue when you took birth, you know? And you just identified with your body, and society told you to live your life a certain way, and that's what's happened.
Could you say again, or what clue you might have had was pretty soon delusion?
Yeah, but you were actually born as soon as you took birth. If you'll read, and you'll read in Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a graduate study, the way you'll read that the fortunate child in the womb can remember its past lives and prays to Krishna. When I get out, I'm going to make a difference this time. I'm not going to get caught in illusion. A fortunate child, not every child in the womb, but a fortunate one. But then, as soon as you're born, the illusion, the power of illusion, the atmosphere. Industry atmosphere is so powerful you immediately forget. And plus the experience of being born just wipes away your memory. It's very traumatic. That's why you don't remember life in the womb. It's been erased because of the trauma of being squeezed out of your mother's womb. So the fortunate child, the baby Richard describes, the fortunate child in the womb can remember several past births and it prays to Krishna. This time I'm going to be different. I won't forget you. But then as soon as you're born, that's gone.
And if that's not, how do we know?
How do you know who you are?
Well, if that's the most fortunate child, it lost its memory on birth.
Yeah.
And who wrote the book?
No, no, not everyone loses their memory at the time.
So this is something...
Generally speaking, yes, there's some who are more fortunate. So we'll move to number two, bewildered by dualities. Everyone knows what a duality is? Dualities are hot, cold, pain, pleasure, sweet, sour, male, female, young, old. This is the story of our life. We're just battling dualities. We're surrounded by dualities. So here's a duality, male, female. So you're wrestling with that duality. Sometimes the wrestling is good. Sometimes the wrestling is very traumatic and very heart-wrenching.
One learns.
Huh?
One learns.
One learns.
Win lose. That's it. Like Jenny was saying, some moment she feels elated, the next moment she feels down. These are dualities that are bewildering us. And this world is a place of duality. Therefore, you have rich people, poor people. Sometimes the rich become poor, the poor become rich. Peaceful people, angry people, sick people, healthy people. It's very troubling, all these dualities. And they bewilder you. You don't know how to solve them. It's like how Macy maybe on Wednesdays discussing spiritual relationships. Well, the problem with male-female relationships is based on duality. So sometimes it seems to click, and other times it's a really frustrating experience. It's like this, 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 and every so often it's like that, and then immediately it's like that, 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 that. And so, you know, you're just trying to make work it out, trying to make it real. And the people are urging you on, yeah, you gotta work on your relationship, you gotta work it out. But what's the point of all that labor? Vanessa, what would you say is the point of all that labor?
I don't think people necessarily think we've got a relationship or so for yourself. Maybe they might show up frankly to do one day.
Once again, your path and get where you want to go, but no one knows the path or the destination.
Well, you know how you say that some people will show up to know before they're born, or like you said, our partners of the game, we lose them through a game.
There's nothing lost about the path in that we have to. That each one of us has something unique and special. We're meant to understand we're not this body, that's the beginning. Understand we're spirit soul, and ultimately we have to understand we're part of the supreme soul. That means we acquire knowledge of the individual soul, knowledge of the supreme soul. What do you think? Sounds interesting? Conditioned life, bewildered by dualities. One's warm, then it's cold. I'm happy, then I'm sad. I'm healthy, then I'm sick. The steady stream of dualities is a very frustrating experience. And the same thing can cause you to be happy or sad. You can be around a person. You can be around a person who is like, when I saw Brendan and Vanessa, was it yesterday or the day before? The day before. I could see they were in one mood. Now I see they're in another mood. It's obvious. But these are dualities.
They're not necessarily put off by the person of that.
True. It's caused by the atmosphere you're living in. It's part of being conditioned. It's part of living in the material world. And then we'll be happy about something else. So it's always changing. And these things are always present. Male, female, hot, cold, pain, pleasure. So as long as we're swimming in these dualities, we can't find real happiness.
Maybe we can find coping skills. Skills to cope with living in this material world.
Why not learn how to get out of material existence, because we actually don't belong in it?
What are we doing here?
So you finally asked the right question. What are we doing here? Very good. How many times have you come here before you finally ask that question?
I'm sorry I wasted so much fun, but just tell me.
Well, how would you answer him, Jenny? He's asked like the moment of truth. What are we doing here? What would you say? So what are you doing here?
going on. I'm just hoping at the end.
Just hoping. Actually, you're not hoping. You're on a losing streak, you know, you're getting old.
I need to materialize something.
What?
I need to fix a thing.
Well, that's what everyone thinks. I mean, you know, that's part of conditioned life. You're accepting these illusions as real, so therefore you're undergoing the process of these illusions.
If we realize something, you might be a few who do, and possibly more than...
True, but what about you? Do you realize?
I don't feel as though I hit for a while. I mean, I might still get into little bits of material life because I'm weak or whatever the reason, but I think that behind it all, within it all, I've had an awareness from day one. I've been something which is more than just what we take for granted.
All right, so you had a good feeling in the right direction, but you have to find it to be more substantial than that.
What?
Otherwise, it's not really human life. According to the Vedic standard, human life is to have knowledge that you're not the body, not just a kind of a feeling in that direction. You need precise, specific knowledge. I'm not this body, I'm spirit soul. That is the minimum platform to make progress.
Stuck in this body.
No, you'll give it up. You'll give it up. You're in the body temporarily. Yes, for the time being.
This period, I'm in this body.
As far as
I've been led to believe, and my instincts suggest to me, that I can't just sort of exit this body by some unnatural means.
Death will come, you exit the body.
So, I mean, but it's also an option. Could we all just help each other out here?
You can't break out of jail, otherwise what happens when you do a jailbreak?
And they take you back,
and
they?
You can make it, it's worse on you.
They catch you.
It's worse on you.
That's
so if you try to break out of the system by suicide, then you just suffer more in your next birth.
Because
you made an illegal break. You should learn to get out of prison in the bona fide way. Get released.
So
get paroled.
You should tell some people some good things to say to a parole officer.
Yes.
And then you might kill us.
The best thing to say to the parole officer is Hare Krishna. Alright. Desire. Everyone knows what desire is, right? Anyone here doesn't know what desire is? Now, in this verse we're studying today, Krishna says, all living entities, they are born into delusion, bewildered by the dualities of desire and hate. Now, we all know what it's like to want something, and we also know what it's like not to want something. So, our material life means constantly changing between I want this, I don't want it. I like this, I don't like it. Attachment and aversion.
What about when you realize that regardless of what you might want or not want, you're going to have what you get. And you kind of come to a point where you go, okay, then, well, I'm ready for it. Just give me whatever I'm going to have and I'll go with that.
That's what the animals do. But you're a human being. You're meant to strive for more than just accepting what nature lays on you. You should not accept conditioned life. You should learn how to finish your conditioned life.
In the appropriate way.
You'll only finish it in the appropriate way. So that's why I was telling you Wednesday that you and Vanessa, if you learn the appropriate purpose of having a relationship, then it can help to finish the conditioned life. Otherwise, it just increases the conditioned life.
Do you need relationships to finish your conditioned life?
No, you don't need, but for most human beings, man needs woman, woman needs man. It's not absolutely required, but most people function that way. So therefore, there is a way that male and female can relate to one another so that it can help one another to end their condition of life rather than increase it. It's not absolute necessity, but since generally man wants woman, woman wants man, there's a way, there's an art, science, and culture, how the two can function together for mutual enlightenment. What do you think? Sounds like the way you want to go?
Alright,
so that's ready to pay. That's your spiel. Now, we're going to do the last two together, desire and hate. What is our actual desire? And what is our actual hate? Underneath all the things we think we desire and hate, underneath it is a very deep problem, which is the root of our conditioned life. We desire to imitate Krishna. Now, in order to understand that, you have to find out who is Krishna. Basically speaking, we desire to be the supreme controller and the supreme enjoyer.
Is that good?
No. Because we're just tiny little entities. We can't be the supreme controller and enjoyer. Position's already filled. But our delusion is that we are in our own world and we're separate from Krishna and we can just sort things out as we like. This is our delusion. So we desire, let me imitate Krishna. I shall be the ultimate enjoyer and controller. It's all up to me. I'll make my life what I want. You can't do that. Only the Supreme can do that. But the delusion we're born into is we know we've forgotten. We've forgotten all about the Supreme. We don't know anything. And we don't care. Right? You'll never admit that you're everything. You'll never say you're everything, right? You'll say you're just a part of something, right? But what is it that you're a part of? You don't know. So that makes your whole life irrational. But anyway, you say, I can't think about that now. I gotta work, I gotta build a nest, I gotta get a fulfilling job. And, see what I mean? So this is the root of the insanity. You desire to be the ultimate. That means you desire that you don't have to depend on anyone. You desire that it's all up to you. Be all that you want to be. And then finally, what is the thing we hate? What's our aversion about? We hate following any kind of overall universal laws. In Sanskrit, it's called dharma. We hate that. We don't like having the law laid down on us. We want to make our own path, our own rules. It's all up to us, depending on how you feel, your intuition. As soon as you say to anybody, there's overall laws of karma that control all of existence, oh, we don't like that. Even when they talk about karma, people just kind of say it in a way that, you know, you define your own karma. Now, there are overall universal laws. But we hate that.